my patient really got out of there, he was required to have three excruciating biopsies, only the last of which yielded enough for a biopsy. And then to find out whether the cancer had spread, needed to have a PET scan. I understand from radiologists that's about $5,000. So I want to tell you the very first thing I did when that patient saw me was I told him he needed to go immediately from my office to the Rood Center and apply for Medi-Cal. I said, you have no idea how fast your small savings will be eaten up by this. Well, pretty much after the biopsy was out of my hands into the big boys, and he was referred down to UC Davis, and I got a call last week that there weren't really any more options. That's a bad disease, cancer of the pancreas. But he came in at the end of August, and he said, you know, I applied July 9th, and I haven't heard from Medi-Cal, but I've called repeatedly, and they just talk in a kind of medicalese, or should I say bureaucratese. It's almost the same thing. That made my very excellent secretary very angry, and she got on the phone, and she kept calling all day long, and I actually got on the phone too. At one point, someone said, well, I'll look into the matter, but I can't talk to you about it because HIPAA, you know. Now, HIPAA, for those of you who don't know, is a set of regulations cobbled together, I think, after 2001, dealing presumably with privacy. But what it really is a large monkey wrench that is used by bureaucrats to throw in the spokes of any wheel that happens to be running. It is, it's labeled on it, to be used when you don't want to talk to someone else. In my experience, it always trumps common sense. So this patient, and believe it or not, there's a small glimmer in this, because after an entire day of phoning by two of us, he got the Medi-Cal after 7 weeks. Now, it probably occurred to some of you out in radio land, and maybe even some of you here in this room, why would this patient who is self-employed improver of houses, buying houses and then fixing them up, obviously can't do that work now, why did this patient work and pretend to exist in California without buying some health insurance? Well, that question occurred to me, and I asked him rather directly, and he said, well, I wanted to have health insurance, but they charged me over $600 a month, and they wanted to exclude anything to deal with immunology. And that was because about 10 years ago, a rheumatoid factor had turned up positive, and so they're going to exclude anything connected with rheumatology. Of course, the patient had no symptoms of rheumatoid disease. And he said to me, what kind of insurance is that? I want to let that echo around. What kind of insurance is that? Welcome to the market economy. The corporations have a, I love this phrase, a fiduciary responsibility to their stockholders to maximize profits. And as a matter of fact, when I was, you know, when I believed in the Tooth Fairy and the Easter Bunny, you know, sometime in my 30s, I believed that the purpose of insurance companies was to spread the risk. It's not true. Their job is to avoid the risk because it's more profitable, much more profitable, to insure people who are very healthy. I want to point out something. Corporations can be formed by good people and still do evil. Corporations are not, despite the 14th Amendment, the way it's interpreted sometimes, they're not persons. They have no spinal cord. They have no brain. They have no conscience. They particularly do not have a conscience. But they do share one thing, a survival instinct. And they'll fight you tooth and tail, fair and foul, breathing fire and shedding scales, 3 minutes? 3 seconds. 30 seconds. So I take your lance of exposure or your lancet, scalpel. There's no reason not to shoot them dead.
Thank you, Dr. Bilderbrough. And now we would like to invite our audience to participate. If you'd like to come up and make comments or ask questions of our panel, I'm going to turn the microphone back away. You also don't have to come up. You can signal one of our wonderful people around here if you'd just like to share something, but you're mic shy. And I'm going to put a phone number out over the air for people who might like to call in. It's a grand experiment, so we'll give that a shot. If you're in the radio listening audience, the phone number would be 530-263-5344. You can also check out more information if you're just interested by going to onecarenow.org or to healthcareforall.org. So at this time, I'd like to invite people to come on up if they'd like to have a word. Thank you.
I have two questions. One is, you've mentioned that there is a shortage of primary care providers in our country today due to our current system in sending specialists rather than primary care providers, and yet the system relies on primary physicians to make referrals. I just would be interested in hearing from somebody on the panel in terms of, is there concern about the shortage of primary care providers creating a bottleneck for referrals for people? The other question I have is that talks about cost containment and decisions about investments. I'm assuming that our existing hospitals would still be the hospitals that would be used. So are we talking about UC Davis or, you know, the different hospitals, but they have to go through the cost containment process to get approval for new equipment? I was a little confused about what that applies to. Thank you.
I can take a stab at the first one. If your question was whether a shortage of primary care physicians is creating a bottleneck for referrals.
Upon implementation of this system, because it requires referrals from a primary care physician to a specialist, because I did hear in some congressional study that was done a few years ago, and they looked at the number of primary care physicians we have in this country, they said that if we were to implement universal health care today, we would have a huge shortage of primary care physicians to be able to implement care for everybody. And so upon implementation, is there a concern if referrals to specialists have to come from a primary care provider? Are we in fact going to have at implementation enough primary care providers to be able to serve everybody and then to make those referrals to specialists without people getting a bottleneck of not being able to get an appointment with their primary care provider to be able to get to the specialist?
Well, in my opinion, there's already a shortage of primary care physicians, and the present system is making that worse, because it's so difficult to survive as a primary care physician. And a single-payer universal health care system would make it more attractive to be a primary care physician and therefore attract more people to go into that field.
I think there's another aspect to it also. Countries with universal care, the financing also goes towards medical education and directing young people into the specialties, and I include primary care as a specialty, as primary care wishes to be included. All areas of the country have different needs and different distributions of different specialists. And one of the many good things that would come out of a universal care system would be the organization of medical education and residencies throughout the country, so that although it wouldn't immediately take place, the manpower that would be person power that would be available in the different specialties would become better.
May I also just add that, as was mentioned, you have several physicians who had to shut down their doors here in your community because they just couldn't afford it. They couldn't make it. If for every patient you see you get reimbursed, that then becomes a financial incentive to continue practicing, to be able to afford practicing. And I'm assuming that this would be, and you folks would, the doctors would be best able to say yes or no on this, but I would assume that then there might even be physicians who might want to step over into primary care just because, again, there's a big demand for it. There would be a lot of patients who now could go and get the care that they needed, and so I think that there would be doctors popping up, becoming
right.
primary care specialists.
Some of the doctors who closed their practices didn't just move elsewhere and open a primary care practice, though some of them did. One went into the prison care system. One became a hospitalist. One retired. Bureau of Indian Affairs. In other words, many of these people might have simply stayed doing a primary care practice right here had they been able to afford it.
And
so,
right again.
Yeah. So there might have been a result of more primary care physicians.
There was a second part to the question, which was about capital expenditures, right? I'm not an expert on SB 840 or campaigning for it, but my understanding is that there would be regional planning as far as capital expenditures. I think the system we have now, we have a competitive system, so that Sutter is competing with Mercy, who's competing with UC Davis, who's competing with Kaiser. So everybody has to have their MRI and their, you know, digital mammography, and they could be across the corner from each other. And who ends up paying for that? You know, when they have all these, we have all this excess capacity, you know, Sutter's going to want to use their MRI and to pay it off. So therefore, it encourages, in my opinion, overutilization. And to me, some sort of regional planning makes a lot more sense. That is one reason why our healthcare is so expensive in this country, is because we have duplication of equipment and services.
I see that some of our students have to leave, and I'd like to remind them to grab some tabling materials on the way out for further information and maybe to prove to the class you were here, all those good things. So thank you for joining us, students, too. Thanks.
My name is Eric Rubenstein. I'm a local psychiatrist here. I've been a supporter of single payer for many years and was very excited a couple of years ago when the state legislature passed it in both houses. I thought it was a historic event. I thought it was shameful that the local and national media just ignored it as they have this time. Talk about a liberal media. That seems to be a myth in this case. We've heard nothing about it. Anyway, it's quite likely that the governor will veto this again, as he did 2 years ago. So my question is directed at Renee. You said there were some very high numbers of legislators who passed it or in support of SB 840. I wonder if there's enough to overturn a veto or how close we are to that.
I actually don't really know. We'll find out, obviously, in a few days, but I actually don't have that information. It's a good question.
We're about four or five people, I think.
Short.
Yeah, is that right?
It was four people. But
we
didn't
have the 2/3 vote in the Senate. exactly sure when it was I heard of SB 840. It might have been when I saw the movie Sicko. And I actually went out after that and printed up information on SB 840 and stood outside the movie theater and passed out information. Okay?
Thank you.
What I don't get is, as wonderful as this is supposed to be, why every time I bring it up to anybody, nobody has heard of it. Why are we not getting the word out? That's what I don't understand. And I'll tell you something else that just kind of blew me away. I went to the rally in San Francisco, and I brought home a picket, you know, one of those picket signs, and it said, health insurance, yes, or health care, yes, health insurance, no, and then vote SB 840 or support SB 840. I put that outside my gate. I have four people who live past my road. That's it. And I had, the first time I put it out, somebody wrote on it, earn it. Okay? And then after that, three more times, that sign was torn off my gate. What is going on?
Brainwashing.
What is going on, and why can't we get past that?
Yeah,
this is what people want. Why aren't they going for it, and why aren't they being educated about it? I don't get it.
What, if I can say, I mean, I've talked to a lot of people about this. There is an inherent fear of government involvement in our daily lives, and it's one of the points I tried
to. Too late.
Too late.
You may be right, but, and I think you're right, but the fact of the matter is that the majority of voters probably today are so afraid of increased government involvement in our daily lives that they will veto or vote against something like government-sponsored health care. They're cutting off their noses to spite their face, but still, that's the way they are. They're fallible, just like we are fallible.
So. And may I add also, the other side, because this is mostly a very Democratic, it leaks into the independent, but the hard Republicans, they don't see it. And they're not, as she just said, and I mentioned earlier, people just don't hear it. And they're afraid of change. And that has a lot to do with some of these things and these issues is that they're afraid of change. And they don't know what the door is going to open and what they're going to see on the other side.
Yeah, and I think Michael Moore made a good point in his film, was it Sicko? He said, you know, they're afraid of the social medicine, even though it's not necessarily socialized, but, you know, it really is no different than our fire department, police department, library system, educational system. There really isn't any difference. So if you're having a hard time with health care, then we might as well just dismantle all of it, for Pete's sake. Yeah.
But what we're talking about, single-payer universal health care. First of all, universal health care means everybody has coverage. Single-payer means that there's one entity that handles the money. And what I have to say, I've been disappointed in all of the candidates in this campaign, with the exception of one who's no longer in the race, in the presidential campaign, I mean, because what they're talking about is universal health care, but not single payer. They want to keep insurance. They want to force people to buy insurance, which, as far as I'm concerned, that's keeping the devil in the deal.
Mm-hmm. It's like Massachusetts.
And I agree with you, Burnett. This is Roger Hicks speaking, but it will. Our leaders are not going to lead on this. It's going to take meetings like this and, you know, demand from the people before they're going to listen. So thanks for coming.
Yes. And may I also say thanks that it is in how the debate has been framed. And for years, the debate has been framed to the advantage of the insurance companies that, a single-payer system is socialism or, you know, and there are these buzzwords that we as Americans rapidly back away from. And so we have to, put new language into this. We have to frame it in a new kind of way. Like I said, it's civilized medicine. It's publicly funded, privately delivered health care for all. Everybody's in and nobody's out, and that is a system we can be proud of as opposed to what we have now. Right. And so it is. Now each one of you takes it out to your neighbors and emails it to all of your email list, and this is how we do it as grassroots.
That's what we're doing. That's why we're here. So join us, because our focus is to educate people and let them know this is out. And where did you go? I was at the San Francisco rally, too. There were 3,000 people there, and I didn't see any. We're going up against, I believe the insurance companies are the third largest contributor, political contributor. They are very, very powerful, and we are going to have to rise up and demand change because our politicians aren't doing it for us. And join us, and that's what we're trying to do.
Hi, my name is Linda Rackmill. I wanted to address a few things. I mean, one of the things is that the media is corporations, and it doesn't serve them to cover this kind of gathering. And that's why your neighbors don't know what it is, because it's not being covered by the media. The other thing I wanted to comment on is last year I went to the CMA meeting, which is the California Medical Association, and they invited someone from the governor's office because at that time the governor's plan was to have the physicians pay a portion of the health insurance. And so when this guy came up, I mean, basically what they see is the phasing out of primary care and nurse practitioners and physician's assistants filling that slot. And I can only say we have nurse practitioners and physician's assistants, but they don't have the education to and experience to, you know, be the detective that a physician needs to be to find some of these problems. And I don't think that's the solution, but that's what the governor saw, and that's what his representative said. And the other thing is that I feel like even if we have single payer, if they don't raise the price of what primary care and internal medicine, psychiatry, and pediatrics make, nobody's going to go into those specialties, because the way they pay physicians is by procedures, and most procedures are done by surgeons, and most internists and family practice think, and you don't get paid for thinking. And that's got to change if we want to keep people in those specialties.
I just want to remind people that this evening's event is being produced by Healthcare for All, your local chapter for Nevada County. And we're, again, grateful to KVMR for broadcasting us live here tonight. Healthcare for All is sponsoring a fundraiser to help get the word out on this sort of thing. On Saturday, September 20th, the fabulous Jennifer is organizing that. She's holding down court back here in the corner. We have a wonderful selection of raffle items that artists, because she kind of strong-armed them because she's an artist, they donated. And so we'll have this excellent auction and raffle. If you'd like to see a pre-look at the various items, she has some back there, as well as raffle tickets. So we hope you'll join us on Saturday, September 20th at Siemens Lodge in Nevada City to help fund the activities of us trying to get the word out on these issues. Next, I think we have some comments from Don and then Bill.
Thank you. A couple of comments on what was said before. I understand there's also some interest in having the primary physicians have their loans paid off as if they'll agree to go into primary care. So that's one of the answers that's been proposed there. Second, you mentioned about spreading the risk. I mean, in economics, the higher the risk, the higher the premium you have to pay. So if we have a large pool, the larger your pool is, the more the risk is spread, and therefore the premium can go down. So therefore we can keep our costs down if we have a full single-payer plan nationwide, as well as California being a large state. One other question, though, I had was in this SBA 840, In Medicare, most people still have a Medigap policy, which is with private insurance companies like AARP or Blue Cross, et cetera. What would happen under the single-payer bill in terms of meeting that gap that the actual basic care doesn't cover?
I think I can answer that. What we do have, or all that we have, as far as exact numbers go, are numbers from 2006, which would have applied had the, 2005, had SB 921 passed, which was the forebear of SB 840. So I have some fairly specific numbers that were drawn up at that time. So you'll have to inflate all these by, who knows, 2%, 5% maybe. But given that, the simple answer is you wouldn't need Medigap because all services are paid for by this.
Essential.
All essential, yeah. The income would be from what is essentially Medicare and Medi-Cal in this state. Well, I'll read you the amounts. Federal spending, which is Medicare, would be $54 billion, 55. Medi-Cal and other state funds would be $17 billion. Employer payroll tax would be $55 billion. Employee payroll tax, $25 billion. Self-employed business income tax, $8 billion. Non-wage, non-business tax, $3 billion. I don't know what that is. And a surcharge on incomes over $200,000, $1 billion. And that would do it. That covers all your primary and acute care and your long-term care. And everything. Dental, psychiatry, vision, chiropractic, mental health, workman's comp, this story about the workman's comp, these fights wouldn't exist because who cares if you hurt your back at work or at home or, in a car accident? It'd just be covered.
And there's also, the Americans are supposedly, we're so litigious, and there's all the medical malpractice things that happen here because a lot of it is who pays for the medical care that an individual needs if they did have some sort of injury. So same also not only with workman's comp, but also in just the medical world itself. Now all of a sudden, if you have a single payer system like SB 840 or the HR 676 nationwide, there's not so many suits against doctors because you're going to be cared for whatever your problem is going to be medically cared for. And so that also takes a lot of bite out of whatever the litigious suit dollar amount we have to suffer through with now.
I'd just like to comment on two aspects, one just briefly. Some years ago, I went to Germany. No, I didn't. That's a lie. I went to Austria. I was thinking, post-Anschluss, and went to Allgemeinmedizin, Generalmedizin conference. And this is kind of old material, but the way that they they meet once a year, they being big organizations who have long Germanic names, and they negotiate how many specialists that they need in that particular district. There's several districts in Germany. Germany's smaller than we are, but still the idea that you would need so many ophthalmologists. And so, for instance, in my class, 8 people out of about 110 went into ophthalmology. That seems a disproportionately high amount. And so I think it's not impossible to solve the problem of maldistribution of doctors through a series of, shall we say, inducements and things like paying back medical indebtedness and so forth. That's not an impossible problem, I think. Just to give you a historical perspective, I went to my 40th class reunion in Cincinnati, and I remember coming into Cincinnati, there was a big sign that said, "Save our Republic, impeach Earl Warren." Earl Warren, as you may remember, was from California, so it was not particularly, it seemed a little ominous. At that time, when I was in medical school, the big issue was Medicare. Should Congress vote in Medicare? And it was pretty clear to most of the people on the faculty and the elderly people that were in positions of power that this was actually produced in the Kremlin and had been passed into the United States through people called fellow travelers. You know, there was a belief that the government shouldn't do anything just a few years before I was born, which was, you know, a little bit after the last ice age. But with Franklin Roosevelt and the New Deal, all kinds of new things happened. And may I close by saying what Lincoln said, which is, the occasion is piled high with difficulties, and we must rise with the occasion. The dead dogmas of the past should not dictate the future.
So just a couple of quick reminders. Our time is a little after 9:30. If you'd like to call in from home and participate with us here, you may dial 530-263-5344. That's a cell phone that will bring you live and direct right to our forum here so we can take your phone call if you would like to participate. And also just a quickie, a couple of misunderstandings about SB 840 that I'd like to clear up for people that I often hear or have heard tonight. In addition to a lot of the coverage that you heard from our panel here earlier, and I liked Sue's reference, I think it was Sue's Cradle to Grave, SB 840 essentially offers private coverage for you with public management, but we all still pay for it according to our ability. And so most of us now would pay less than what we are currently paying. Some people who really can't afford it would not pay. Some people who can afford a lot more would pay more, and it would just work out that way. And everyone would be covered. Every resident would be covered from cradle to grave for everything that they needed, which are essential services. You would not get augmented or enhanced in ways that maybe you would do privately, but that's not an essential service. You'd have to seek those sorts of things on your own. But you would be covered for dental and vision and chiropractic and psychiatric and primary medical and surgery and all the things that we need as healthcare consumers. So that's one thing I wanted to make sure was clear. And the other thing is people often refer, and we've heard it tonight, people saying, "I hear socialized medicine." This is not socialized medicine because, first of all, we are still paying for it. And secondly, it's privately provided. You still choose your physician, and you have an arrangement with that physician. But California ends up negotiating, for instance, pharmaceuticals. If you've got one big California saying, "Hello, Merck," or "Hello, Pfizer, I'd like to buy 40 million pills of Prilosec, make me a deal," they're going to make a deal, kind of like Walmart does, except it would be California. So it's like that. It's a good arrangement. It's bulk purchasing at our favor. So just want to make that clear. If anybody else would like to come up and make some comments, feel free. Thank you.
Chris Anson, Grass Valley. If you'll allow me to speak as a skeptic here. There's a principle known in economics as the tragedy of the commons, which is to say that if you're not responsible for paying for something, there's no real disincentive for you not to use more of it. And I've read the text of Senate Bill 840, and it, as Beth added, includes a lot of things like all the vision care, dental, medical, you name it, including homeopathic medicine, massage therapy, you name it. How do we make sure, my fear is that if we open the valve, the money will flow. How do we make sure this doesn't turn into a complete hemorrhage?
That's a great question. And it points, this is Larry Danto speaking, it points to our need to define what essential care is along with all of this legislation. And quite frankly, that's a big hurdle that we have to get over. It's not simply a matter of defining what specific services are considered to be essential, but how much of these services are essential. And in order for these programs to be successful, it will be necessary for the medical profession, the nursing profession, to sit down, as they do in countries where they have successful universal care programs, and define what the essential services are. And that's how you keep the floodgates under control.
I'd like to add something, too.
I guess I might add that Senate Bill 840 does not accomplish that.
Well, but don't forget, it's not a dead document once it's passed. All right? It goes on. It evolves. And as the process takes place.
I guess I have to trust that.
Well, the financing for SB 840, even if miraculously the governor signed it, the financing hasn't been negotiated. Aren't I right on that,
yes.
USB 840 experts?
That's correct.
Yes, okay. So that all has to be hammered out. So it's just as you say, the financing, including many of these points, is all would be in another bill, yet to be negotiated. But I just wanted to add, in regard to this exact question, I feel real strongly about there needs to be a copayment on visits. And as it stands right now, 840 says there will be no copayments on visits. We all have had in our practices patients who don't have a lot going on in their life and go to see the doctor as a form of entertainment. And I'll tell you, a $1 copay will sometimes disencourage that. And even a $1 copayment is really an important thing to have. It may not sound like much, but you guys might be amazed. A $1, $2, $3 copayment is going to be would help what you're talking about.
May I just, though, say also one more thing? For this economic theory, I think, works very well and is very reliable and appropriate for things that are pleasurable and things that, give us some sort of, But, I mean, how many extra prostate exams are you going to go get? And how many extra colonoscopies are you going to go get because now they're covered? The thing about medicine is, I agree that there are some patients who this is their form of socializing, and those are sad people with sad lives, I think. But I think for the majority of Californians, there isn't the same kind of incentive to overuse medical care as there would be, skiing was free to everybody or, going to the mall and taking whatever you want. It's a whole different kind of economic exchange, and the pleasure-pain ratio is a whole lot different with medical things.
Hi. I'm Stuart Sheps, and I'd like to thank you all very much for appearing here and taking this stand, and you guys get it. The problem is that we are being held hostage by the lobbyists, by the corporations, and it doesn't matter what we say unless we do what's going on here tonight. Thanking Beth and getting more people, as Renette said, to make it happen from the bottom up. Recently, I heard on NPR about the Taiwan health system, which was developed 10 years ago. And the director of health spoke on NPR. And he said, we're a small island, and we have a very large population. And the population is growing very rapidly. And we realized that we needed to create a form of universal health care for our people. So what we did was we traveled around the world and we looked at all of the different systems that existed, and we took a little bit from France, a little bit from England. We didn't reinvent the wheel, we reassembled it so it worked better. Now, we don't have to reinvent the wheel. All we have to do is create a system in the same manner. This is certainly not impossible. You all are medical professionals. Your job is treating people, not collecting bills, not billing people. That all drives the cost of this up. The second thing that drives the cost of this up is the multi-tiered system of billing. For one procedure, there are 10 different prices. One insurance company gets one price. Another insurance company gets another price. The guy who has no insurance pays the highest price, which makes absolutely no sense. Recently, a year and a half ago, I decided to get some medical testing. And I realized I had Blue Cross cost me over $1,000 monthly for it. And I realized that my copay was quite expensive. So I was going on a vacation to Asia. I've done business in Asia. I'm familiar with Asia. I went to Bangkok, and I went to a hospital called Bumrungrad Hospital, the number one international hospital in the world. I had every test known to man, $360, all in one day. When they came back with the results, they reviewed them that day, what other things they thought I needed. The next day I went back and got. I went to the cashier. I paid my bill. It was reasonable. All the testing that I had together was less than one blood test at Sierra Nevada Hospital. Now, how can you explain that? You can't. We are being controlled by terrorists. When the CEO of the insurance company makes 10 times what the doctors make, there's something out of whack there. You know, the majority of the people in America, the 5 out of 6, have insurance. They don't see a problem. Congress doesn't see a problem. They take their insurance card, march in, and pay nothing. It's the 50 million people who don't have insurance. And it's way beyond that. I had insurance. I have good insurance. Try to get them to pay, because I have individually paid insurance. If I belong to a group, they pay. But it's easier to deny an individual.
No, that's not. They deny groups.
They deny groups too. But I had dinner 2 weeks ago with a large insurance broker from Colorado and discussed this. And she said, well, the majority of my clients that belong to groups don't get denied. 1 in 17 is one thing. Every bill that gets submitted by me or the people that provide my insurance, I get a denial, or it's under your copay, or it's not covered by your insurance. You know, and what do you do about it? You try to fight them. Just to get an answer from somebody, you got to go to 17 different people who then shuffle you off to someone else, and eventually you give up, or that's what they expect you to do. When my mother passed away after a three-week stay at Sierra Hospital, 6 months later, a bill arrived that was $1,200. I called up, and I said she had Medicare, she had secondary insurance. What's this bill for? Oh, we don't know. Well, could you get, if you want me to pay the money, you have to tell me what it's for. Well, we probably didn't collect yet. So another 6 months, don't worry about it. Another 6 months went by. I got another bill. I called them back, and I said, if you want me to pay this bill, you have to explain what it's for. Well, we can't do that. Then 2 months later, I got a bill from Medicare. They resubmitted new billing for things she didn't get and collected. I never had to pay. The system is so convoluted on the billing end, and it's so confusing on the billing end. Your figures were what, 25% is what billing cost, Rod?
The overhead is about, it's about a third of every dollar is on administration, and then that's not including the overhead for collecting billing in the doctor's offices in the hospital. That's just
right, and that also doesn't include the people who don't pay or can't pay that go to collection, and then the collection company gets 50 or 60% of whatever they get. The key is having reasonable cost health care. If you have a single-payer system, it's logical you won't have 15 different charges for the same procedure. You'll have one. Now, to address what you asked about how would you control people taking too much advantage of the system, the man in Taiwan said, we have a simple way. Most people are reasonable, and when they're not well, they go to the doctor and they get cared for. When we see, and we live in the computer age, when we see too many charges for one person, we pay them a visit. And it's all within the realm of feasibility if we choose to do it. The key is forcing the people in control to choose that path. Instead, they'd rather choose the other path of scaring you about you're going to be in socialized medicine, you're never going to get care. The barking dogs herd the sheeple into fear of something that would actually do the country good. You know, if we're talking America first, then health care is at the top of the list and has to be addressed. And it has to be a single-payer system. There's no other way. Every civilized country, as Dr. Hicks said, has this. What are we, chop liver? I mean, what's going on? This is America. In Thailand, the people said to me, what are you doing here? You're from America. You have the best health care system in the world. My comment was, oh, it's very good if you can afford it. Thank you very much. Thank you for being here.
Hello, I'd like to also thank you guys for coming. I'm Dr. Garrett Eckerling, and I'm a family doctor here in Grass Valley. I guess I'm one of those extra special people because I've been here for 10 years in the same practice. So that's great, although it's been quite a struggle, especially the last five. And my hat's off to Dr. Dubrow. I don't know on $21 a visit how he can possibly do it. I can't do it, honestly, on the Medicare equivalent would probably be $58 or $63. My overhead is 75%, and I imagine that's much greater than Dr. Dubrow's. And I know that if we had the system, my overhead would go down precipitously, as I wouldn't have the billing specialist and the authorization specialist and the referral specialist and et cetera, et cetera. Those were my introductory comments, not necessarily my questions, which I do have. One thing I was going to say is if I made one-tenth of what the CEO had made, I would be just unbelievably thrilled. The truth is probably closer to one-thirtieth, at least from the numbers I just heard. I wasn't paying that much attention because, oh, stock options too. Yeah, I'd like a okay. You know, I know. I'm just saying. One thing I wanted to say is that there really is not an access to care problem or a shortage of physician problem. There's actually a compensation of physician problem and a shortage of compensation to physicians. And I'm, you know, being here for 10 years, I definitely, put patients first. And I think that most of the talk so far has been how to provide all this care, which is fantastic. But I just wanted to give the one perspective as the physician that in order for this system to pass and to work successfully, the physicians have to also be on board. 59% of physicians may support, universal health care. Not 59% of physicians in this state support this bill necessarily. And I'm not up here to play devil's advocate, because I actually do support this system, although this bill, I agree with a number of comments, it really does have some major problems. The one is absolutely the no deductible. That will be a big, huge bugaboo. I can tell you 10 years ago when we started here, the copay was $0 and then went up, I don't know, not quite $5 a year. But now most people with HMOs, it's closer to $35, let's say. And I got to tell you, over the difference between 15 and 20 and then on up is enormous. People can afford 0, 5, and 10, and they will literally come in, not because they're lonely and nothing bad or negative, but they have legitimate questions about that rash or why their elementary school kid has a runny nose. Whereas when it's $20, they'll put a little bit of Cordate on their rash and see if it doesn't go away and then wait 2 days to come in. So I think there does need to be some good utilization, and I think right now there's been over-utilization review, but that I'm not sure what the system can be, because we know right now that the Medi-Cal system necessarily isn't a good one, and the workers' comp as to how they oversee that system. But one question I had, I guess, and I'll wait for the answer because it's really a question, and that is, what's wrong with Medicare for All? And is this plan really Medicare for All? Because it doesn't seem like it is.
I don't think it's Medicare for All, and I don't see anything wrong with Medicare for All. Matter of fact, that would be my first pick. But even so, we still have to define essential services, and I agree with you. There need to be copays. There need to be deductibles.
And you know, like I think you guys have said, that the money is not infinite, and care is not infinite. And you know, I don't know if we need to go as far as Oregon, as far as their rationing, so to speak, as people have used, or lifestyle medications and things like that. But the reason I think overall that healthcare is so expensive is because everybody wants everything and they don't have to pay for it. And so I want to make sure that this is a reasonable way to do it. And then my last comment, which I don't know is a question unless I'm incorrect, and that is that if this passes and gets implemented and there's no Medigap, so to speak, does that mean that all the insurance companies will essentially be put out of business because there won't be any business for them to do? And although we would all clap and say that's fantastic, and I guess we put the buggy whip manufacturers out of business when we went to public transportation or whatever it was, but it just seems like we do have an enormous uphill fight because the amount of money that the pharmaceutical industry and the insurance industry and the hospital industry and the stockholders of all these industries is going to be an enormous, is going to be an enormous hurdle to pass. So, anyway, thank you all for this great information. I appreciate you all coming and helping me understand.
Just to give a little bit of information, I know that there's a lot of background to squeeze 57 pages of SB 840 in this forum would be very difficult. So I just want to give a couple of heads up about things. There is a provision in SB 840 where there will be no copays for the first 2 years. They want to establish how the system works as it's written, and then there is a mechanism by which it would be reconsidered and copays may then be added at that time. Additionally, there's a blue ribbon panel that would consider things such as essential services, fees, those sorts of things, and a healthcare commission that is part of this, which is staffed by primary physicians, surgeons, chiropractors, vision people, who would look at how is this working, how does it need to be structured, and they would be the designers of the system and how to keep it improving and moving along as these sorts of questions, especially from physicians and from skeptics and other people, come up. They don't want a system that is on a titanic path to the iceberg. They want to say, this looks like a good thing. It's probably not going to start out perfect, but we can make good progress on it, and here's a mechanism by which to accomplish that. So there are checks and balances built into this legislation, and I want people to be aware of that. We aren't going to name them all right now because that would be impossible. We'd be here till next week. But I encourage people to go to onecarenow.org or healthcareforall.org and read up on it. There are great fact sheets. There are great summaries of it. You can find out a lot more about it and have these questions answered for yourself. Additionally, I'd like to thank people for saying workers' comp, since it includes all genders. And the the last thing is covering everybody for early and preventative care is not more expensive than what we're doing now, which is late emergency life-saving intervention that has been borne out in the studies. There were massive studies done before SB 840 was crafted and written, and in those studies, single-payer was the least expensive, most cost-effective, most efficient, and most high-quality mechanism for delivering health care. And they considered that there are so many people who are uninsured who get emergency care as primary care, which is the most expensive way of delivering medicine. And when they compared that with, if we take all these people, insure them, give them early preventative care, the cost was not more, and yet everyone would be covered. And they showed that that would be a reasonable way of delivering it. So just to clear that up.
And may I add, I just want to keep it to California. You know, we talk about going to the country and all the other countries that are have it. We need to make our own California plan, and we need to keep it here so everybody else, they'll follow. I mean, they will. They will follow. We just need to keep it close to home and make it work here.
Hello, everyone. I'm Jennifer Cole. I'm the treasurer of Healthcare for All, and I want to address what the lady was talking about, no one knowing about this, and it goes a little deeper than that. It's not only do very few people know about it, but very few people are willing to do anything about it if they do. And there's a little document in our past that starts out, we the people. I think we've sort of forgotten about that. We're not going to get our politicians to do everything for us, basically because they're not really working for us. They're working for the people that paid for their campaign, which is number one, oil, number three, insurance, the insurance industry. And the lobbyists that are on their tail all the time, reminding them who paid for their being in office. So unless we actually get up and do something ourselves and become we the people again, we're not going to get anywhere. We have to do it ourselves. We have to become a force to move progress, to make change, and we shouldn't be afraid of change because it may not be perfect, but we'll work on it. And if we work on it, it's got to get better. You know, anything is better than what's going on now. Anything. So I just want to urge our radio listeners to please do something. Thank you.
And speaking of our radio audience, we will be saying goodbye to them in just about a minute and a half, so I want to make sure to mention some things. First of all, thanks so much to KVMR for providing this live broadcast. Paul Patterson and John Fletcher for staffing us here tonight and making all this magic happen, however you did it, the genies, whatever, great. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. And thanks again very much to our fabulous panelists, all of you. Really appreciate you all being here. Also, if people missed this or you got fired up and you want to share it with people in the future, it will be broadcast at some point on NCTV Channel 11, our local station, so you can share it or look for it there. To find your local chapter of Healthcare for All, you can go to onecarenow.org. You can read all about SB 840, find out more about it. Infect people with your knowledge and your passion for this and get the word out about it. And I'd also just like to remind people that it helps us get the word out if you support us by coming to our raffle, and I'm sorry, our auction with a raffle on Saturday, September 20th at Pioneer Park in Nevada City. It will be at the Siemens Lodge there. It will be going all day. Music, food, wine will ply you, and you'll come and support us so we can get the word out. So come enjoy a great time. Right down the street will be Circle's birthday party, so there's great free music there. You can come up and support the auction with all the money you didn't have to spend at Circle's thing. You know, it's just an all-around great deal, so come celebrate Healthcare for All. You clean up the river in the morning, you come support the auction. It'll be a grand day at Pioneer Park. So once again, I'd just like to thank KVMR. Thanks, everybody, for being here very much, and this is the conclusion of our forum. Thank you.